Welcome to Sales Talk for CEOs. I'm glad you're here. I'll be interviewing CEOs who have successfully scaled their B2B sales organization. In each episode, I'll start by uncovering the sales background of each CEO, dig into the strategies they use to build their sales organization, and wrap it up with what the future holds. We'll cover the good, the bad, and the ugly of scaling a sales organization. I'm your host, Alice Hyman. Hey, it's Alice Hyman here. Excited to share with you another great episode of the Expert Series on Sales Talk for CEOs. And today I have Sean M. Doyle here from Fitzmartin. And I cannot wait to get into a conversation that you are all going to love because he and I agree on almost everything. We'll see if we can find a place to disagree. But we are here to really talk with you about what he calls centricity. And what I am always saying on all of my posts and all my podcasts that sales, marketing, customer success, and really the entire company do need to work together. And when they do, when they align, things are beautiful. So welcome, Sean.
Hello, I can't wait. Alice, this may be the most boring episode ever because for two reasons. One, you and I think so alike, we are going to have to fight to find something. But maybe I'll just reassure your fellow customers and believers and that they've hired the right person because that's, I'll tell you, that you are spot on with your thinking. And here's the second reason. I think I'm a marketer, right? I don't know many CEOs who woke up and said, if I could just listen to a marketer today, that would be great. But let me ask you this. Before CEOs, before you turn this off, you know to listen to Alice, but why listen to me? Because I am a marketing schmuck. I want you to think about this. Answer this question in your head. What's the value of the deals that you have in the middle of your pipeline today? Today. I can tell you, based on science, that 50% of them are going to stall.
Yes.
What's that? What's that money? What's that dollar sign? So whatever that number is that's in your head, that's why you should spend the next couple minutes with us. I'll also drop a few ideas about how to save some money, how to save some time, and how to even improve your ability to lead these departments as they come to you looking for guidance and direction. So that's my promise. We love working with executives just like you, Alice.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know that I believe that the CEO is truly the only one in the organization that has the power to orchestrate everything that needs to happen today so that we can meet the customer where they are. Because we are selling in a very old-fashioned way, right? Some doing things that worked years ago, some worked 10 or 20 years ago and absolutely do not work now. And if sales, marketing, and customer success don't learn how to align and work together and then help all of the other departments come along as well, we're not going to get where we want to be. We're not going to scale our sales. And the CEO is truly the only person who can orchestrate that.
Agreed, because you're the only person that everybody will listen to, right? I mean, as a CMO, when I've been a fractional CMO embedded in a business, I can say what I want to the other people in the executive team, but yeah. I'm just the marketing schmuck
right? That's
right. There's such a terrible history. There's a legacy around marketing that is art and craft focused. Now, yeah. I will tell you, art and craft has value because if we can't communicate, if today the production values of this podcast were so bad, it was a barrier to communication, you'd turn it off, you'd move on. There is value to that. But if it's not rooted in business strategy, if it doesn't understand what the objectives of the stakeholders are, then it's art and who cares? And you've hired somebody in the past where you were disappointed with what you got. And it's probably because what you got was creative, it wasn't strategic, and it didn't have results. So as the net result of those bad experiences is two things. One, you have a negative view perhaps of marketing. The positive way to view that is you've got this fabulous lever you can pull that will have more impact on your business if you do it right than you ever dreamed of. Because most of us have already goosed out finance. We've goosed out and optimized production. We've looked at our sales team. We've sent them to 100 sales consulting things. How much more training could they need? More, right? So we've done all these things. And then we went to marketing. Or maybe it wasn't creative. Maybe we bought into, oh, I'm going to buy this digital technology company. They're going to get me leads. Yeah, they got you leads, but then you went, oh, the lead quality is terrible. Why are we wasting our time with this? Or we bought a new website. The website didn't have any traffic. Okay, we're going to buy Google Ads. Okay, now it had the wrong traffic.
Yeah.
So why does this stuff not work?
I think that what's really hard is that CEOs are not marketers. They didn't come from marketing. They might have come from sales. That's rare. They usually come from being an engineer, inventing something, or maybe they came from financial background or even sometimes legal. But most founder CEOs are people who invented something, right? They had an idea and they built it. They didn't have any marketing background, and most of them didn't have a lot of sales background. So we're going to talk some more about that. But before we go down that rabbit hole, pun intended, we want to stop for a moment. And I just would like you to tell our listeners what FitzMartin does and what does your company do? What do you provide for your customers?
Wow. Well, they don't really care about me, Alice. They want to know how I can help them and what they're going to get out of this, but I'll tell them anyway. FitzMartin focuses on emerging middle market B2B entities. Typically, they're family held. They, just like you, a lot of complexity in the sales cycle. It's not just something simple. It's not retail. And we work with those executive teams. We apply this centricity model, which again, another marketer with another model. Here we go.
Hey, well, marketers have to have models. That's just the way it is.
We all need models. But here's the deal. This model is not mine. I think it's just hubris to think that I could come up with a model good enough to tell you about. This model is based in behavioral science. It's third party. It's validated. And you'll love this story, actually, Alice. In 2002, I was given this book called Changing for Good. Prochotka, Norcross, and D. Clemente are behavioral scientists. And I read this book, because I'm kind of weird and wonky and read behavioral science books. And I was reading it, and it was about people and how people change. I'm like, this is what we do in sales and marketing. We take somebody who's buying a product or a service, and they don't know about a better way. And we take them through the journey of discovery to a new way and a better way. And then we help maintain that behavior. Wait a second, that's marketing, sales, and customer success. That's exactly what this is. This is incredible. Okay, then the next thing was, this book outlined there's a process that everybody goes through. And notice, I'm not talking about marketing, sales, and customer success. I'm talking about the buyer's point of view. Everything's rooted in the buyer. It's centered. Its centricity is all about the person going through the journey, or the multiple people going through the journey. So in that setting, people go through different steps. Yawn, said every salesperson. It's called a pipeline, marketing dummy. Yeah, I know it's a pipeline, but did you know that there's 6 steps that everybody goes through? Your pipeline might have 30 steps, 5 steps. It's got pre-engineering and post-engineering and production and da 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 da, and that's fine. But you can boil all that down into a simple framework of 6 steps. Executives, I want you to be hearing, do you mean I've got a framework that I can manage within? Yes, you do. And it's called centricity. But all of this is outside of me. Okay, so one more aha. There's 9 best practices that inform how people go through those steps. I'm not selling techniques. I'm not selling anything that I can deliver. And I can give you the idea. And we frame everything in these best practices. So for example, did you know the money you wasted with that agency last time probably was because they didn't know there's best practices that work in certain types of behavioral change at a certain time in the behavioral change and not in other stages? I bet every agency you've ever hired has been great at creating social liberation, doing testimonials, creating awareness of your product. You need to be looking for somebody who knows how to, and I'd love to talk about briefly, private commitment and public commitment. Those are middle of the funnel sales tools and techniques, best practices that come out of that that don't have any bearing early stage. Yeah. So it's not that this is the most boring thing at all. So the CEO that you're an idea person, you don't need an agency that's got ideas. Okay, now my whole industry is now angry at me. You don't need an agency that has an idea. You need an agency that understands the needs of the buyer and how they're different at different steps in the process. And you need that from marketing, you need that from sales, and you need that from customer success. Because if you use the same things that you use to get somebody to come to your website at the beginning of your journey, if you use that at the closing table, your buyers go, Do you think we don't know who you are? We were ready to write a check. And you're now telling me about the history?
We sell past the close, right? We sell past the close and we share information that doesn't need to be shared. But let's dig into this a little bit because, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, wow, what CEOs need is something very prescriptive. We sometimes think that our CEOs know everything. You and I were talking about this before I hit record, right? Our CEOs hire all of you who support CEOs, to help them become better, right? To help them fill in the gaps where they're not strong. And I think that marketing is one of these areas that is so misunderstood. And again, like we feel like we're just throwing good money after bad, and we don't really know what marketing is supposed to be doing. And we don't know how it interfaces with sales. And we certainly don't really understand why we still need marketing when with customer success. And once they're our customer, marketing? Why are we marketing to them? Isn't marketing about filling the top of the funnel? So we have all these crazy ideas, right? And so we have to kind of take a look at it. And you said it, we have to look at it from the customer point of view. So as a CEO, it is my job to know and understand my customer journey, my current customer journey, because how they bought before the pandemic is different than how they're buying now. How they bought 10 years ago is different. And it's my job to know and understand that customer journey. And then to say, if we're going to meet our customer where they are, who's the best person to meet them here? Who's the best person to meet them when they're in the middle? At the beginning, at the end, who is the best person? How should we do it? What is the best way to do it? So if you have some frameworks around that, you know, let's definitely share. But I say when our customer first arrives on the scene, they know they have a problem. And in our world, it's complex. So it's not one person. There's a committee of people who are going to be making a decision together. They all have to go gather information. They all have to digest that information. They have to talk about it. They have to research, right? They have to come to some sort of consensus, and then they have to figure out how their company is going to buy this thing that maybe their company has never, ever bought before. So if that's the case, how do we as CEOs help our selling teams, which should consist of sales, marketing, customer success? And when I say sales, I mean the sales engineers and the subject matter experts and all of that that come into play, whatever department they are in at your company. How do we as CEOs work with our teams and our leaders to help them understand the customer journey better and how they should be meeting the customer wherever that customer is to provide an exceptional customer experience?
Alice, I've got two things I want to share. One, I'm going to ask you to invite me back because you just said something that's really interesting. You said our buyers know they have a problem. I think that's wrong. I think a lot of our buyers don't know they have a problem. And a lot of our buyers, a lot of our potential revenue for the future is sitting out there, and we haven't, the science would point toward the idea of raising consciousness. I didn't know there was a better way, or I know there's a better way, but I'm not willing to go through the pain of the change.
Okay. I don't disagree with you. However, I'm talking about the ones who we're talking to because they know they have a problem.
They've self-identified.
So I think there is definitely education that's needed in the marketplace that we can provide to help people who don't know, right? They don't know what they don't know yet. But for those who we know are going to buy something like this because they've already bought it once before from somebody else or bought it once before from us, or they're actually looking for it, right? Now they've Googled and maybe landed on our website. Maybe they downloaded something. Yep. And so I'm not disagreeing with you. I think there is a whole world out there for marketing to capture. And that's why we do trade shows as well, because salespeople can talk to people who said, oh, I never even knew that existed, right? There is plenty of that space, but we're not even doing a good job with those who raised their hands.
Okay, fair. I'll focus
my... through our website and said, I would like to buy from you. Like, we're not even helping them buy from us, right?
They gave us a signal of intent and we ignored it.
Exactly. We didn't ignore it. We just dove right into wherever we thought instead of figuring out where they were.
Yeah, right. We dove into, I can give you more information on that, or I can tell you, let me tell you some stuff instead of helping people make sense of all the information that's out there.
Because here's what I do think at this point in their journey. I think they know they have a problem and they're looking for a solution, but they may be looking for the wrong solution because they don't thoroughly understand their problem.
Agreed.
And if we start to sell them a solution, we're crazy. Right? We are just plain flat out crazy,
right?
Because we need to know if we're solving the right problem. And sometimes they don't. They see it and they go, oh, this is the problem. Let's go find a software or a piece of equipment or something to solve it. When we start to dive in deeper, we find out, oh, that's not actually the problem. And if we sold them something, it would be irresponsible. We don't do that because we pressure salespeople into closing deals. That's what we do, right? We pressure salespeople into closing deals. So you tell me you want it. My goodness, I am going to sell it to you, even if it's not the right thing. And I think that's the first place where we don't meet the customer where they are. They've come to us and said, I need something.
Agreed.
But we didn't dig deeper to find out if we have a solution, the right solution for what they need. So let's talk about that.
We constantly call that the flip. You know, if you're selling, customers are such incredibly, they have such incredible skills. Buyers have incredible skills of identifying whose self-interest is being pursued. And we all are really good to identify when the salesman's pursuing their own, salesperson is identifying their own needs, right? We're all good at that. That's like a good human trait. So yeah, you've got to have that flip. But let's talk about your intersection that you were pointing toward. What's the test? How's a CEO have a practical way to test this? And I think there's a really simple and very powerful way to pursue. Because remember, we're saying that, and data is pointing to 40 to 60% of these middle of the funnel deals die. So for sake, you know, where we started at the top of the show, what's that number in your head? What's this worth to fix all those people that die? Well, Alice, you're pointing to that, right? We're sending the wrong information at the wrong time.
Right.
And we're not talking about it from their point of view. We're not coordinated with each other. So executives, here's what I want you to do. Gather your SVP of sales, your CMO, and whoever's in charge of your customer success, customer service, whatever you want to call it, customer experience person. Put them at a table, put a piece of paper in front of each of them and give them a pen. Very old school tactical, but it's intentional. Ask them one thing. What do you do? What does your team that you lead do to close more deals? What do you do at the closing table? We're sitting across the table from the buyer. What is your strategy? And let them write. I will guarantee you right now, all those strategies aren't going to be aligned. In fact, I'll even predict maybe one or two of the people at the table will say, I don't even have a role.
Yeah, right. That's right.
It's like, but you do have a role. Sales, you know why you're there, right? Yeah. You're there to help the person sell or solve a problem based on what it is you're selling, the product or service. Customer success, why should I be at the closing table? Because if I'm going to change my behavior and buy your thing, I need to know what it looks like on the other side.
That's right.
Otherwise, you're putting all the risk on me. Yeah, but
well,
Sean,
I'm going to pause you there for a second. I do see companies bringing customer success in sooner, which I think is marvelous, right? Because just exactly what you said. Well, if I'm the customer, great that the communication was good prior to me signing on the dotted line. What's going to be like afterwards? How are you going to onboard me? How are you going to make sure I am successful?
Yeah.
Right? Because that's what counts. Not that I bought from you, but that I'm successful using whatever you sold me. That's what actually counts. And that's what any investor out there, any stakeholder should care about, successful customers, not just a customer. So
that would be a good answer. If you're at that table and you do this test and you get that from them, that's a good answer. Yeah. A bad answer is I take care of them later. We onboard them, whatever.
Or I don't know. I have no role.
Right. And then the next question, if they say I've got a role and they understand that, then I would ask, how many closing tables have you physically sat at, or prior to closing table, how have you involved, right. how involved right. it? And then the other thing I'd say is show me, I mean, I'm old school, right? Show me a piece of paper. What do you give to this buyer, this prospect mm-hmm. that, so they have a physical, tangible, it's a web page. That's fine. It's a video. That's fine. But I mean, show me how you're communicating. If they can't show you what they're communicating and they're just saying they're doing it intuitively, it's all lovely unless somebody gets hit by a bus. Plus, it's just not in your system. You haven't, you've spent money to build a system. And then when they leave, your system goes out the door along with your money, and then you've got to rebuild it. So it's got to be codified. It's got to be communicable. Yeah. So sales again is going
to
get it.
Ask more questions. They need to ask questions of the leaders and see what the answers are.
Yeah. Alice, what's your experience with marketing? How many marketing leads do you think? Now, we're talking about pretty good-sized companies here. You're not on the executive team and being just a total numbskull. There are, I'm surprised at the scale of some of the businesses I have, and I see a lower level of marketing leadership than people want. And I'm going to challenge the CEOs is because you haven't had high enough expectations. That CMO that says I'm not involved at the end. Well, we just got done saying customer success is involved. The CMO should at least say, you know what, we need to codify and clarify and build the communication tools to help sales close. Right. We should be supporting sales. They should attend some closing meetings so they understand what it's like. They should have a voice of the customer program.
Yes.
So, and understand. They should do a customer. When Fitzmartin does voice of the customer, we do three groups. We do winners, right? Hey, you're a customer. We're going to interview mm-hmm. you. We also do prospects. Mm-hmm. You've never worked with this company, but you're middle of the pipeline.
Right.
Incredibly informative to see what somebody who's in the middle of your journey, the middle of the experience that you should be intentionally designing, what do they see? What do they not get? What do they get? And then the third group, I think, is even more interesting. The lost customers, lost prospects.
Yeah.
Are you doing that? So what are you going to do at the closing table? Well, I should be able to come and say, you know what? I've interviewed 10 lost deals, and here's the consistent pattern.
Yeah.
And that's not quantitative research. That's qualitative research. And that's fine. I just said that backwards. That's not qualitative. It's quant. No, I did it right. Anyway, it's numbers. It's not numbers. 10 people is not numbers, but it's feelings. And if you can identify, a good marketer can identify a pattern,
Absolutely. I mean, people tell you the reasons, right? And, and if you do good third party research, you'll get the real reasons, and a good third party researcher can dig in and try to get the real reasons for you. So I think that maybe anecdotal, like you said, but it is what it is. It's their perception, and that's what's important. So we can change that, because again, our job is to give an exceptional experience. Whether they buy from us or not, they should get a great customer experience, right? They should feel like they were listened to, treated well, understood from the moment they say, hello, I'm here, to closing the deal or losing the deal, and through their onboarding and their path to success, right? So if we're doing, if CEOs are looking at that whole process and we're doing everything we can, right, to intersect with them all along the way, that means we have to know what role the sales team plays, the marketing team plays, customer success, and there should be overlap, right? Because that's the alignment. Mm-hmm. It's like, when do you do what you do best to help our customer either move forward with us or quickly decide that, oh, this is not a good fit and they should look somewhere else?
Yeah, right. You know, here's another insight I'll offer that I think is an aha moment for marketers. I want to hear your marketing team say, let me tell you how we help close more deals. We communicate the reduction of risk of change. we equip the buyers with all the processes they're going to go through. We understand at the closing table, and the research proves this out, that 80% of all people at the before they change behavior, 80% are saying, I'm just going to do things the way, yeah, I can see your product and solutions better. It's just, there's too much risk. I don't want to take it.
That's right.
So, I mean, I want to know you're addressing those issues. It sounds crazy to say at the closing table, what I want you to do is look back at doing things the way what would it look like, Alice, before you buy this $100 million thing from me or this $10 million purchase order? What would happen if you just keep doing things the way you do it now? Right. It might be okay. It might not be worth spending $10 right. million with me. And then Alice is telling me the reasons why she should buy.
That's right.
Right? That's a much better, and that's a customer that customer success can hang on to versus the great sales techniques where I'm self-motivated as a salesperson to get my commission and I use all my Sandler tools and all my selling techniques and I get you to sign the deal and then 6 months later you're fired or the business.
Well, buyer regret is huge when we do that. And buyer
80%.
Regret is huge 80%. These days anyway. Right. Because our buyers, as Brent Adamson, my good friend, always says, you know, they lack confidence. They don't lack confidence in you as a seller, although that could be it as well. They lack confidence in themselves and their team to make a good decision to spend someone else's money. And based on that decision, they may look like a hero or they might lose their job. So I think role that marketing can play is to inform sellers, the selling team, on what their customer needs, what their industry needs, what a day in the life of those buyers is like, and give them the right language and the right tools to help those buyers gain confidence in their own ability to make a good decision. It's completely lacking. We leave salespeople completely on their own to write email and send it out to provide content that, you know, like, where did you even get that piece of content from? You know, and if the marketing team could help the buyer by helping our selling team with content that matters to the customer and helps them build the confidence they need to move forward, it would be amazing.
Confidence is such a great word that you're using. I love it. And I mentioned earlier, there's sort of the model of giving information, telling people information, or helping them make sense. And that's coming from a Gartner research model.
Yes, it is. Yes.
That says that, like 8 out of 10 people, that if you help them make sense of their decision, they'll close. And isn't that interesting? Because most of our models in sales and marketing, especially at the middle of the funnel, end of the funnel, are all about telling people, right? We're going to tell you what we're going to do. We're going to tell you, we're going to give you information. We're going to provide this. And that's not what people need. They need help making sense. So again, it comes back to comp design. I'm not an expert in compensation design. But if you've incented your sales team to close deals, that's what they're going to do. If you incent them to close deals that stick, that are right fit, that are right, you have to develop your culture and your model. Right. But that does matter. I mentioned earlier private commitment versus public commitment. It is one of the 9 best practices in centricity. And what's happening at the closing table, and even just before the closing table, is this act of making a public commitment. So helping me make sense as a buyer of what I'm going to recommend our business do is important to me if I'm the lead on this choice. Otherwise, I'm going, hey, Alice, you're the CEO, and I'm thinking about doing this thing. You're going to, what's the problem? Why does it make sense to spend that much money? What? And if I can't answer that, I'm like, then I look like a fool, right? So marketing and sales, your job, at the end there, and customer success, you've got to equip me when Alice asks me, if I ask for $10 million PO, I've got to say, listen, here's the deal. Here's the problem. Here's how it's going to be solved. Here's the benefit to the company. Here's why I trust their customer success. It's not just fluffy air. It's not, you know, we did a diagnostic earlier. It makes sense. Alice, I think it would be really wise to spend the $10 million. Now, all of a sudden, the closing table doesn't have pressure. I'm calling you saying, hey, I'm ready to go. ran it by the CEO. She's behind it. Why are we waiting? You know, it just changes when you help
it just
people.
makes the whole process easier. I mean, the whole idea, and I say this all the time, is how do you make it easier for your customer to buy from you, right? Make it easier for me to buy from you, make it harder for me to be your competitor, right? What are you doing to make it easier? And I think we lengthen our own sales cycle, we make it hard for the buyer to buy, and then we complain about these long sales cycles and difficulty closing and things being stuck in the middle of the pipeline, right? If we really jump in and examine it, we've done most of that to ourselves, because at the beginning of the buyer journey, we didn't provide them with what they needed, the guidance, the insight, right? We didn't provide that to them. And so now here we are in the middle, stuck because their team either got diverted onto something else that they felt was more important, or has, you know, just overwhelmed in trying to make this decision. So they're like, you know, let's just pause it. Or maybe it's no decision, you know, they're not going to move forward. And we're just lost in that because we didn't do what we needed to upfront in the beginning. We were all about telling and demoing, and instead of digging in and understanding and solving. Sure. But let's help the CEOs. Earlier, you mentioned the 9 best practices and the 6 somethings. I can't remember. So let's take it down to some tactics for everybody listening. What are those 9 best practices that they should be following?
Ooh, that's a long one. First, I'd start with free help. So fitzmartin.com/free help.
Oh, great.
You can
perfect.
Download all this stuff.
All right.
It's hard to talk through. And if you're driving, don't try to write this down. But So the pipeline are the 6 steps, and that's where all behavior, people go from a state before they've even considered buying anything through to a point of what we would call advocacy, right? We don't need to spend a lot of time about the stages. You've got a pipeline already. I will tell you that, and if you want to challenge me on this, and email me your pipeline and I'll do it for you. But you can take any pipeline. I've never run into a pipeline where I couldn't simplify it down to 6 steps.
Yeah.
And I believe one way CEOs will be more successful is have simpler systems.
I agree. I have seen the craziest pipeline stages in the world. And what they really end up being, Sean, is they think they're stages, but what they are is activities.
Yes.
And I have to point out that your pipeline, I call it a funnel pipeline, but your opportunity tracker, whatever you call it, should have stages. And in those stages, there are activities that the buyer needs to do and the seller needs to do, or the selling team needs to do, to keep moving everything forward. But those activities are not stages. And that's why you end up with 10, 12 stages in your pipeline, because you are tracking activity versus actual stages, whether or not an opportunity is moving forward or not. And I think that just mucks up everything, especially when they're not mapped to the buyer journey, which mostly they are not. So that's, you know, just crazy talking, right?
Alice, if y'all could see me, listeners, I just high-fived Alice. That was great. She's so spot on. So your pipeline has nothing to do with you. Your pipeline it's centered on the buyer, centricity. It's because it doesn't, does your buyer care that you went through pre-engineering?
No.
The deal didn't move forward while you were doing pre-engineering. The deal's in exactly the same spot.
Well, and so, you know what else? I really firmly believe if we switched our sellers' attention when they're entering things, their opportunities, and updating their opportunities in whatever CRM you use, if we focus their attention on the buyer's next action versus their next action, deals would move so much more quickly, because what we have now is, you know, a close date, a next action, and a next action date, right? And everybody's monitoring that because we want to get to the close. Well, here's a clue. If you're doing this right, eventually the next action date will be the close date. So why do you even need a separate close date? But, you know, that's the way they built CRM. And because everybody wants to try to forecast off close dates that came from a quota. I always say close dates come from customers, not quotas. But you forced me to put in a close date because the CRM works that way. And I guess that close date. And then you forecast off of that. Now, some of us are better guessers than others.
Yeah.
And some of us do ask the customer questions. So we're fairly close, but it's just insanity to me. But
one of our tech partners is a Fortune 500, and I get their, our cam is always calling me like, well, this date doesn't even seem achievable. And I'm like, well, it's ridiculous that there even is a date. I don't know when they're going to buy.
Right. Exactly. It is amazing to me that companies function this way still. However, if we said that next action date is really the only thing that matters, right? And tells us whether we're moving forward. And when the customer does tell us that they have an implementation date of X, we can back up and know what date they're going to sign, right? And okay, when you know that, then put it in. That would be awesome. But until then, why guess, right? Well, yeah, you guess because it's in your quota and you have to guess. But think about it. If instead of saying, my next action is to do a demo for the buyer, instead if you said the next action is for the buyer to bring the right people to the demo and tell us what they need, because sellers do what they're supposed to do or they're fired, right? So they're doing actions. The problem is they start here and the seller does an action 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 and they think it's time to close. But guess what? The buyer's way back here. They haven't taken any action. They're still sitting back here. We have to keep them moving along together.
And you and I work in these complex B2B environments with lots of influencers and decision makers and maybe a contract, and you start 6 months ahead of time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how often do you see a seller who says, this is 90% close chance by the 30th of next month? Oh, have you talked to finance? Have you talked to production? Have you talked to all the influencers?
Legal.
No, but Alice is on board. She believes me, man. She's going to buy this. She told me she's going to buy this. I have a deal with the company.
Craziness. We have to start getting the close dates based on the customer's implementation date and back it up from there. And we're asking the wrong questions as leaders, right? What's the close date is not the right question. What's the implementation date? Because sometimes salespeople promise crazy things. You said, the implementation date is January 2nd. Well, wait a minute. There's a holiday in there and there's all this other stuff. That means we would have had to have closed 2 months ago for you to be implementing on January 2nd. That's crazy talk,
can't
right?
Do it.
So, anyway, we can talk about close dates all day long, but back to the stages. You said
quick answer your question, right?
So, right?
Yeah, you've hired 100 agencies before. They've done the early stage stuff and they probably did it pretty right. And of the 9 best practices, 4 of them are effective early stage. And that's you have to raise consciousness. You have to help people understand why your product or service matters.
Right.
You want to create some social liberation. It's a powerful technique. Why does that person use this product? Oh, I didn't know that. They're the industry leader. Now your agency calls it a testimonial. That's not what it is. It's not a testimonial. You want social liberation. And we could talk about it, or you can read a book or what. I mean, whatever. We can talk about it later. I'll explain it later. There are some videos in the free help section at fitzmartin.com/freehelp. Emotional arousal and rational reevaluation then are powerful. Now your agency will use those too soon. That's something to watch. Marketing emotional arousal gets people excited about it. Alice, all those ads that you've seen at the Super Bowl, and the next day you said, oh, I love that ad with the guy that did the thing and then
but
the cheaters.
I can never remember the product, Sean.
Right. So that's what happened there is the agency created emotional arousal, but they hadn't created consciousness raising.
Right. The brand recognition wasn't there, yeah.
Alice, you're going to be tall, thin, young, and beautiful. If you eat these Cheetos, you would have gone, whoa, I'm going to pay attention, and I would have known what a Cheeto was later, right? But if you just make me laugh, great. And there's some complex aspects of marketing, the large brands. Cheetos is probably doing the right thing by creating, brand. If you think about it, a Super Bowl ad for a Cheeto is a current customer communication tool. They're not trying to draw new people. Right. So it's a different use of tools. That's too complex for what we're talking about. So there's emotional arousal, rational reevaluation. I would tell you that you're still early stage tools. I'd check your website and make sure both emotional and rational are showing up strongly on your website.
Yeah.
Then this is where Fitzmartin's really great, is this middle of the funnel stuff. This is where the agencies kind of stop being interested. It's not as goofy and creative. It's where a heavy influence and balance between sales and marketing has to come together. Yeah. It is where revenue optimization's in place, technology to deliver messages and give business intelligence. That's where we get excited. That's where some more. There's five techniques left. Helping relationships is one. That's that idea of consultative selling. This private-public commitment thing. You've got to convince me before I'm going to go to Alice, the CEO, and ask for. I'm not going to risk myself. So you've got two sales. You've got to get me privately before I'm willing. If I'm the buyer, by the way, if I'm the buyer, I've got to be convinced before I'll go public with it. I mean, think about it. You wouldn't go sit down at your leadership team meeting and say, "Hey, this. I really haven't vetted it yet, but this thing looks cool." You idiot. What are you doing? Then at the closing table, there's three more powerful things. There's countering techniques. Well, that's taught in sales. Yeah, it is. But is marketing equipping countering? No, probably not. There's environmental controls. Why do people go to golf? All right, well, I'm going to pick on golf. My question isn't why do we play golf with people that we're getting ready to close? I love that idea. I've got 4 hours to talk to Alice while we're playing about what's going on. I'm not manipulating relationships or trying to build relationships with Alice by playing golf so that she has an obligation to buy from me. It's a 4-hour interview. We've all heard that phrase. And that's a good use of environmental control. Yeah. My question to executives is, why do you approve me, my budgets, expense reports when I take Alice out to play golf? And, is she a prospect? No, I just met her. What? You took a half a day and spent $500 on somebody that's not even a prospect? Yeah, people approve that stuff all the time. Blows me away. It's a very powerful tool. You'll increase your close rates by 40 to 60% if you'll use these tools at the end. Environmental controls, great tools. And then finally, rewards for positive behaviors. Sean, we're not raising two-year-olds here. Well, guess what? We're human. There's still rewards. Rewards can come in three. Another conversation for another day. But every human being is critically talented at avoiding pain, personal pain, strategic pain, financial pain. So how have you communicated to your prospects what the rewards will be of buying your product or service? Have you communicated the personal reward, the financial reward, and the strategic reward that they will get with this behavioral change? I bet you haven't. That's why centricity is so valuable. It's tied not into my silly marketing ideas or a bunch of hubris, a bunch of hype, a bunch of hope. It's built on science. It's built on the way humans work. It's. I wish I could say it was me. I've just thought about it for 20 years.
Well, I think it's a beautiful thing that we recognize that humans make decisions the same way they have always made decisions. That part has never changed, right? And so we have to understand how decisions if we want to help them make a decision. Absolutely. We don't do that very well right now as sellers, as selling teams. They make the decision the same way they always have, but the inputs are different now, right? And so they buy differently because of the internet, because there was a pandemic, because their organization acts a certain way, because the sellers act a certain way. So if we understand how humans make decisions, it certainly helps us understand how we can change our behavior and be more customer-centric, right? This whole centricity idea, and move towards them in a way that helps them solve their problem. But before even doing that, helps them understand their problem. Like I always hear people talking about, well, salespeople have to bring value, bring value, bring value. I'm like, what does that mean? Bring value, right? Well, here's what it means if you're really going to help the buyer. It means you are an expert in not just your product and service, but how your product and service gets results for people like them that you're selling to, how their industry works, how their customers buy from them, how they want to help their customers succeed. You're an expert in what a day in their life is like. You're an expert in how other companies like them made the decision and got through the whole buying mess at their own company. You bring all that forward, and that's valuable because that group of people that you're trying to move towards making a decision doesn't necessarily have all that insight or information. And if they can look to you to provide it, well, the other CMOs like you that have already done this and successfully implemented at their company, it worked a little bit like this. And they did that. And maybe it would even be helpful for you to talk to one of them because they've already been on the other side of this and they are successful doing it. And it is helping them help their customers. So if we thought a little bit more like that and a little bit less like, hey, you have 12 open opportunities that equal $2.5 million. When are they going to close? What are you doing to move those forward? If we backed off of that and came forward into how are we helping our customer make a good decision, I think the whole world would be, that would be my Christmas present. That would be, the whole world would be a better place.
And to your point, your expertise gives you the ability to be honest and candid. If your culture at wherever you're working, if your culture isn't this, I wouldn't work there. But if your culture is such that you can be honest with your prospects, and then you can say, you know what, there is a lot of information out in the world. And, you know, think about it. Your buyer, let's say they're on a 3-year cycle, contracts that go 3 years. Your buyer goes through this journey one time every 3 years.
Right.
You go through it 3 times a day.
Right.
Think about the expertise that you can offer that person. Now, you've got to have their best interest in mind.
Right.
Otherwise, that's manipulating. It's not selling. Right. Selling should be helping, right? So if you can help people make sense of the complexity of the buying decision, I've got a meeting this afternoon, and that is my job in this meeting with this prospect is simply to say, I know you're looking at 3 alternatives. My job is to help you make sense of how this marketplace works. And in our market space, I know that there's certain people that are going to offer a really low price.
Right.
And they're interested in recurring revenue and they don't do anything strategic. And then there's companies that are very expensive, that are very strategic and can't even tell you what it's going to cost to execute yet. And you need to choose, and here's the different models and here's how they work. This buyer doesn't know that. They don't know how my industry works, but I do. So, you know, and there's a middle ground in there. Anyway, Alice, you and I could agree on 100
things. So there you have it. Sales and marketing agreeing on everything. What?
And customer success.
Alignment. And customer success. I wish we had a customer success person here, but I do know that those I know in customer success would totally agree with us. And they're always asking to be brought into the process earlier. And in some of the kind of more modern, you know, companies that I'm looking at that really do meet the customer where they are, customer success actually has the first touch, not sales. And that's a really interesting model. And I have been looking at some models that out there that there are no salespeople. There are only customer success people. That works really well in a find, try, buy model, even when it's a complex sale, by the way. It's sort of interesting. So I think that we just have to rethink things a little bit. Yeah. As CEOs, we need to sit down with our senior teams and just rethink, how does our customer want to buy? How do we make it easy for them to buy? And how do we quickly figure out when they shouldn't buy from us so that we're not chasing stuff and forecasting things that are just really never going to happen? All right. So as we wind up here, I want you to just share, how do we start moving this direction? If we're a little bit there, maybe we haven't even really started yet, but what are some things that CEOs should think about and do to become more buyer-centric and, you know, move towards this model of centricity?
Yeah, well, the free help page on our website is designed to be just that, free. You don't even have to give me your email address. Just come look at it and download stuff and watch videos. We're not doing any marketing magic. What I want you to do is just begin to contemplate that there might be a better way. What is the value of half of those deals that are going to disappear from the middle of your pipeline? That should be a motivator to consider this more. You've got a number in your head, you should, and you run a successful business. You've made it. Do you realize how few people get past $1 million in revenue? Or do you realize how few people get past 25 employees? Very few. You're in the elite category of business leaders already.
Yeah.
So the idea of optimizing and improving, and I think, again, this marketing world, you probably haven't considered the lever that you can pull there. Okay. You know, and the worst of them have hired, my nephew just graduated college. She's creative. And, you know, well, then expect what you get. You would never do that with your CFO, right?
No.
Why would you? Why do you do it with marketing? I've never understood that. Or it's just been unconsidered. So I hope you'll at least begin to contemplate. And as you look at and have a lens to look at your agency, your marketing team, and into sales and customer success, this framework alone, just looking at the drawing that you can download in Free Help, and there's a video that explains it with a little more clarity than we've gotten to today. If you can just start looking through your marketing and sales operations from those lenses, through that lens, I think you're going to start going, oh, it makes sense that why we did Google ads. We got a lot of people to be aware that we existed, but they don't know why we matter to them. They don't know how we could give them a better future state. We don't know. Now I understand. We got them moved a little bit forward through the pipeline, but we were thinking about ourselves. And Alice, the number one mistake I see, we do a sales barrier audit analysis. And when we map out how you're spending money with marketing and sales, the number one mistake, 80% of all people spend way too much money on the early stage stuff.
Yeah.
And never invest or rarely invest deeply in the sales and marketing alignment in the middle of the funnel. And that there's a gold mine there.
Yeah.
There is gold. There's gold in them there hills, Alice.
I love it. I love it. And especially since I live in a gold mining state in Nevada. All right. Well, thank you so much, Sean. I love this conversation. Look forward to many more conversations like this. I know our listeners are going to gain a lot, and they will definitely find all the resources in the book that you mentioned in the show notes. So all of you out there who've listened today, thank you so much. Please subscribe and continue to listen and gain great ideas from the experts and the CEOs that I bring on Sales Talk for CEOs. Bye, Sean. Thanks for tuning in to Sales Talk for CEOs. You can find me at alicehyman.com. Be sure and connect with me on LinkedIn and let me know that you heard the show. If you found value in today's episode, please subscribe, write a review, and share the show with another CEO.